Welcome to the Emerging Minds Families Podcast.
Hi, I'm Alicia Ranford and you're listening to an Emerging Minds Families Podcast. Before we start today's episode, we would like to pay respect to the traditional custodians of the land on which this podcast is recorded, the Kaurna people of the Adelaide Plains. We also pay respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples, their ancestors and elders, past, present and emerging from the different First Nations across Australia. Just like adults, infants and children experience really big feelings. They get nervous and sad, jealous and frustrated, all the feelings that bubble up in everyday life. But unlike adults, children don't often have the words to talk about how they're feeling, and they can communicate them in lots of different ways. As a parent, it can be really difficult to know how to support children when they're experiencing these big feelings. Today we are talking with Jen Muir. Jen is a social worker, parent educator, author, founder of Connected Parenting, and mum to four beautiful boys. She knows firsthand how difficult it can be to manage children's big emotions and has been helping families managing the ups and downs of daily life for over 25 years. Jen is going to help us understand today what we can do as caregivers to support children who are experiencing these big feelings when they don't have the words to tell us what they need. Welcome, Jen. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Jen, I know you've been helping parents to navigate daily life for many years. Can you tell us a little bit about your journey and how you first became interested in supporting children's wellbeing?
Absolutely. A few different pathways led me here. One was that my mum was a mental health worker and family therapist, so I sort of grew up with a lot of these ideas already within my home. And then I became a social worker, so I've worked in mental health, in the law, in domestic violence, and what I started to see was that so many of the problems that I was working with in my work really came down to children having one connected relationship that provided a lot of their needs, particularly in the early years, but it's never too late. But I really started to see how that really was the answer to a lot of the problems that we were facing in the world. But then I went on to have my own children and I went in thinking, well, who could be better prepared? I'm going to win the Mum Olympics because I've got all these resources. I'm a social worker. I literally have a degree in communication here. I am going to nail this. And I went pretty well for the first year. And then I had my second baby and he didn't eat or sleep for 2 years. And my older child in the meantime became a toddler, who, like many toddlers, he was struggling to regulate all of his emotions. He was having some big feelings, and socially, occasionally he would push and snatch and even bite. And I found myself in these particular moments, despite knowing the parent I wanted to be, despite being quite well educated around what children needed, I couldn't find it in the moment. And that pushed me like parenting can. It broke me down to my knees, to be honest. And I just thought, I need to know how to be what my boys need. And I became very determined to sort of work out not just what do kids need, but what gets in the way of us being that in the moment. And that's really become my passion. And it sort of feels like all worlds led to this place, if that makes sense.
Oh, it does. And I love what you said is that parenting actually brought you to your knees, because that's the similar experience that I had. And you do, you think you've got all this knowledge and all this training and background, and then we're all just human, aren't we? And when you talk about these big feelings, can you explain a little bit more to our listeners what you mean by them?
So we know that children communicate their emotions through their behaviour. We know that it's normal for toddlers to melt down. We know that it's normal for siblings to fight. What the stat is between 3 and 8 years of age, siblings fight around 8 times an hour. And most parents will be like, yes. We sort of know all this. We know that kids are meant to find the word no and push back, and that they're going to struggle with worry or anxiety or jealousy, all of those emotions. I just think what we struggle with often is that we get given this baby and I think we know that they need us to sort of pat them and rock them to make them okay. It makes kind of sense. They can't talk any other way. And then next thing, our child is maybe 2 or 3 or 4 or 5, and we start to think, well, shouldn't you be more on top of all of this by now? So I think there's a couple of issues. One is that we have a lack of understanding truly about child development. We think that kids are sort of supposed to get it together at a certain point. And the truth is that they don't really get it together till 25 to 28 years of age, when that frontal lobe fully forms. And up until then, literally how they grow the brain is through mucking up, I think that's one of the issues. The other issue is there is this covert thing, and we'll talk more about it today, but there is this covert thing in the room, which is we don't really see our children's behaviour just as it is. We don't see our children with our eyes. We see them with our mind. So there is so much going on in any given moment. When my child has a meltdown, I can know at that cognitive level, this is normal. Two-year-olds do this. Yet why does my heart start racing? Why do I feel like I'm going into fight, flight or freeze? Why do I feel that if I don't shut this behavior down, I might fail in my parenting or that there might be something wrong with my child? And that's because there is so much going on for us in these moments. And that's the real challenge of this as parents, is that we're trying to do things a bit differently, often to the way that we were raised. Therefore, we're doing this without a roadmap. And often for millennial parents that I'm working with now, we're really learning about emotions alongside our kids. And that is hard. So I often say to people, even my 15-year-old, he's not going to come home, even with the level of brain development he's got, and say, "Mum, I'm feeling really worried about my Spanish test. Can we have some connection? Can we have a cuddle?" Like, he's going to pick on his brother, and he's going to not listen when I say pick up your shoes, and he's going to complain there's no good food in the house. And as parents, we start to think, maybe I'm getting something wrong, maybe my child is disrespectful, and we can help our kids with their behavior, but only if we get to that underlying emotion first. And so our job is to start seeing the underlying emotion behind this behavior. That's not like you. What's going on? We're tuning into that just some of the time, I always say.
And what a great point, because I think so many of us grew up not understanding emotions ourselves, and now we're trying to parent our children through that. And do you think that's really the crux of why it can be so hard to support children through this time?
100%. I mean, I think it's for two things. One is our misunderstanding. We overestimate what kids are capable of emotionally and underestimate what they're capable of physically. So that's one factor within society. And then the second one is our feelings about feelings. So our feelings about feelings, which is meta feeling, that so much of the way we feel about feelings got established in the first 11 months of our life. That blows me away every time I even think about it, that by 11 months of age, you've learned to read which emotions your parents prefer in you and which emotions that they find really uncomfortable. And you've learned to hide or not show some of those emotions by 11 months. By 5 years, even more so, like a lot of our attachment style is set. Now, that's not to say we can't ever change our feelings about feelings. Like, most of us are working on it alongside our kids. We're trying to get more comfortable with the sadness and the worry and the comparison to others and all of that stuff that we do. But really knowing that that's playing such a big role, and it's sort of sitting there. And until we start to recognize, hey, why is this so big for me in the moment, we're going to struggle to be what our kids need, because then we're reacting and we go to fight, flight or freeze. And we're really responding often either exactly in the way that someone responded to us, or in many cases with a lot of parents I work with, they're struggling, for example, to set and hold boundaries because they're actually trying to avoid being what their parents were, which felt scary or mean or really overbearing or sometimes violent. And so they're doing a fantastic job at avoiding playing out those damaging patterns. But as a result, they really struggle to be, you know, kids don't just need soft and connection and love all the time. They do need love all the time. But really, sometimes we have to be, you know, quite firm as well. They need someone to lead and say, hey, obviously your frontal lobe's offline, so I'm taking over here and I'm going to help you with this. So in these really big emotional moments, we're kind of being this balance of kind and firm. And it really is playing this role between containing our child from stopping behavior that isn't going to work for them, as well as being empathetic and kind and really helping them kind of navigate the emotions underneath it. And that's the tricky bit, because I've never met a parent that balances that kind and firm. None of us just go, oh yeah, I'm so great at that. When my child's mucking up, I feel just so kind and firm. We all fall one way or another. And often we partner up with someone who's our opposite. And so we're getting our heads around the fact that we've got to find that balance between us and our partner often, and we've got to find where we fall down. And so for me, I actually sit on the firm side. I naturally want to say, because I said so. And I have to find my client. I have to find that empathy. And when I do, it goes so much better. When I forget, and we all forget, we all have our moments that we're not perfect, it doesn't go so well because our kids know when we're not being kind, they're not going to respond. They're not going to feel heard. And so things are just not going to go. They're not going to hear us. And that's what's so hard about it.
And we hear so many times from parents that there's this ideal of perfect parenting and we've got to get it right all of the time. And that's just not the reality, is it?
It's definitely not. And one of the most liberating things that parents can find, and we know this through Circle of Security particularly, which I love that course for parents, but learning that children need us to really show up for them, particularly in their emotions. So in these really big, small and big emotions, around 30 to 40% of the time is an amazing amount. I've got four kids and learning that sometimes you don't have it in you. Sometimes it's not what they need. Sometimes we're not stopping and dropping for every emotion. Once we can not only know that, but then give ourselves grace and compassion in those moments we don't get it, to learn that that actually improves your parenting. You know, for those parents that want to show up and be yelling less and be able to tune in better and kind of all of that stuff that we all want as parents, one of the things I've learned over the years and one of the things I teach is that you don't get there through berating yourself and saying you should get this right all the time. And in fact, it's just not what kids need. And sometimes in the moment, especially in really big emotions, you know, with kids, when they've really flipped their lid for a variety of reasons, we're navigating something. We're not guessing, but we're going, I know there's firm and containment. I know there's empathy. And I'm sometimes just working out in that moment, which way am I going? And there's no perfect in that. Sometimes we're going to set a foot wrong and go for, I'm going to help you and I'm going to set a limit. And then we go, that's not what my kid needed. They really needed empathy. And we're allowed to stop and go, hey, I got that wrong. Let's try that again. We've got repair as well that we can do later, but we also can redirect in the moment and go, I'm going to change tracks. I'm not going to stay here out of fear that I've got to keep doing what I'm doing, even though it's clearly not working. And I think once you realize it can be that kind of a process, it's a lot easier.
Oh, and what a nice message to think that you can be getting it wrong right at that moment and then go, hang on a second, that's not quite working. Let's try something new. I think that will resonate with every parent listening today. And if we go back to these big feelings, what are the kind of things that children are trying to tell us with these big emotions that they're showing?
Do you know, I think one of the simplest things we can do to sort of work out what do our kids need, what is my child saying in the moment? It's just this, and I love it. Is my child okay or not okay? I love that because often we are so confused in the moment. Now, ultimately, what kids are often trying to say is, I'm not okay. I need your help. I need help to organize these feelings. I need help to feel seen, or I need help to be contained. I actually can't stop hitting the baby. I need you to stop me. It's kind of an example of help me, stop me. So they're the kind of things our kids are communicating. But one of the things that we see all over social media these days, and, you know, I'm part of it, but all this information and advice on what you should say and what you should do and naming emotions, for example. Now, we don't really want to be naming emotions in too much detail. If our child is a 10 out of 10 on the Richter scale, they're not going to hear us and it's probably going to make things worse. There's also a risk that if we're naming emotions just to shut them down, our kids feel that. So I love this. Is my child okay or not okay? And my next step from there is I repeat out loud what I'm seeing. So I'll just give you a quick example. But there was a mum in the hospital recently, because I teach parenting classes at a maternity unit, and a mum came to me. She said, my three-year-old came up to me and whispered in my ear so they met the baby for the first time, a big sister, becoming a big sister for the first time, met the baby, it all went well. And as she left to go home, this little girl climbed up on the bed and she said, whispered in her mum's ear, when you bring the baby home, I'm going to put it behind a curtain. And the mum said, is my child headed for prison? Is there a problem here? I said, I absolutely love this. Now, actually, this is very sophisticated because what another child might do is just hit the baby or melt down because they can't even communicate. There's something about this that's uncomfortable. And that child's just saying that, right? But we don't necessarily find that in the moment. That's just one example. So what we can do is we pause, we go, is my child okay or not okay? My gut instinct is saying not okay in that moment. And then I might repeat back what I hear. When we get home, you're thinking you might put the baby behind the curtain. That gives me a beat to process what might be going on. And I think within that little beat, either way, our child feels heard. Like we haven't left them alone and we haven't dismissed it and said, no, 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 you're not going to put the baby behind a curtain. You're going to love this baby. It's going to be your best friend. Just you wait and see, which we do that out of love, but that's not going to help our child. But if we can just sort of take that beat and go, you want the baby behind the curtain, something feels uncomfortable about this. And if you felt a bit worried, that makes so much sense. And you know, we're going to work this out together. Give me a big cuddle. Thanks for telling me. And, you know, maybe we'll say later, I won't let you put the baby behind the curtain. Don't worry. So that, I guess that it's just a story, because so often the behaviour of our kids is so hard to read because it is as quirky and nuanced as that example. And so I love that, you know, what's our child trying to say? If you feel uncomfortable, if you feel worried, if your stomach's turning, if there's anything like that, the chances are your child is saying, I'm not okay. And then if we repeat back what our child is saying, you know, you really want a biscuit and mummy said no, that gives us a chance to go, oh, I think you're really disappointed. We're going to get to that emotion, but I like to almost just start with that. Our child's saying they're not okay.
And so you've just talked about what a parent can do. I've often heard you talk about doing less. Parents can do less, and that's actually really helpful. Can you explain to our listeners a bit about that?
Absolutely. So I'd love to touch on low-level emotions and then high-level emotions. So first of all, because doing less really applies to the high-level emotions. So low-level emotions are those little opportunities, a bit like the child that just said, I'm going to put the baby behind the curtain. That's a low-level emotion because our child's not melting down. We're not in fight, flight or freeze. We've got an opportunity to tune in and do a bit more some of the time. And I love those opportunities. So an example of a low-level emotion might be that my child says, I hate butter chicken. Now, as parents, so often we say, but you love butter chicken. Or we say, if you just have a bite, there'll be dessert. Or if you don't have a bite, there'll be no dessert. And these are bribes or threats. They don't really get to the underlying feeling. And so often for kids, the hating of the butter chicken is representative, or it's sitting on top of like emotions that are below that, which might be just disappointment because the butter chicken is a different shade than it was last week and that scares me. So it might be just fear. But sometimes there is more to it. Like I'm 3 or I'm 15 and I'm processing a whole lot of stuff and I'm actually worried about something else. And sometimes when we come alongside our child, put our arm around them and say, oh, you're disappointed about the butter chicken. That's tough. As simple as those daily moments, I can see you struggling to put your shoes on. It's so hard to pack away the toys. It's hard to leave the park. Like all of those moments, there are low-level emotions that we're not in DEFCON for, and we're able to do more. Now, we don't want to do more all the time, but I always say 30 to 40% of the time we can tune into that stuff and really kind of show our child, hey, if we can do that, we're actually building that kind of all the synapses that help them learn to regulate. That's a really cool thing to do. But in high-level emotions, so you know a high-level emotion because everybody's screaming and throwing things and hitting each other and you feel terrified as a parent and it's never a good moment. I love the idea of doing less because all of the information that's out there is saying, you know, you've got to tell your child to take a deep breath, or you've got to, so we're trying to either stop the behaviour through take a deep breath, or it's not such a big deal. So we're sort of either giving tools, dismissing, trying to teach, or maybe we come in with don't behave like that, go to your room. Maybe we come in with I just can't handle this. If you're going to be like this, I'm going to collapse. So we're sort of asking our child to look after our emotions in that example. But all of this is our fight, flight or freeze system coming in to say, this is scary for me. And it's scary for us because chances are when we were young and we showed a similar emotion, we got sent to our room or smacked or shamed or ignored. And so we learned that wasn't safe to express. And the problem with that now in our parenting is that our child who's doing what they need to do to express their emotions, we're feeling very unsafe. So our instinct is, it's not so bad. I'll get you another one. All of that stuff. Our child might come up to us and be screaming, you like my sister more than me. And we'll say, don't be ridiculous. We love you all the same. So there's all of that stuff that we're doing. The thing about once our kids are at that 10 out of 10, though, they can't hear our words. So when I say doing less, it's really about knowing that really our only role in those moments when our child is really dysregulated, melting down, unless there is sort of a risk of someone being hurt, we're really just trying to say, hey, I'm here and I'm not going to lose it with you. And that takes often all of our energy, just to take a deep breath and I sometimes put my hand on my heart and sort of just think, okay, this is the tough moment. I don't like this stuff, but I've got this. Or I might remind myself, this is a good kid. My child is just learning. I might just focus. Sometimes when that instinct is to say to my child, take a deep breath, I just focus on taking a deep breath myself and just modeling that I'm just going to take a deep breath. Of course, if kids are really so upset that they're hitting, hurting, throwing things at risk of harm to you, the baby, the dog, anything, we've kind of got a different role because they need us to step in and actually help them be more contained. And that might mean picking up a young child and saying, I'm going to get you to your room. It might mean just saying, hey, that has to stop, to a child. I cannot let you hit your sibling. I'm going to get between you and them and I'm going to keep everybody safe. And we're quite firm about that. And it's coming in with that containment. But when I say less, we're not trying to teach in that moment how to be different, and we're not trying to do any regulation techniques, and we're not trying to name emotions or any of that. We're just trying to get everyone back to safety and stop ourselves from losing it. That's our only two goals. And that is really, really hard stuff to do.
And in that moment, just taking that time for yourself, that co-regulation can be so important for children.
Completely. I mean, it makes such a difference. And the biggest thing I have found is that it's when you stop pushing to fix it, to solve it, to stop it, to shut it down. Parents often describe this feeling of walking on eggshells. And that's often a sign we're like the duck with the legs going underwater, doing everything we can to stop this emotion. And when we just surrender and go, okay, we're in it, bring it, let's do it. Stir it, kid. And maybe there's a big meltdown, but gosh, it feels a lot easier than when we're pedaling madly to stop it or solve it. That acceptance.
And do you think there are different strategies for children of different ages?
Yes and no. Like, obviously, with a teenager, if my 15-year-old gets really mad and says, you know, leave me alone, and slams his door, I am going to give him space. And I might say, okay, I'll come and check on you. And I might bring some food later and hope that we can repair and get back there. If a 4-year-old or a 5-year-old says that, I'm probably going to try and stay closer and I'm going to help, because I know that they cannot really do that regulation work on their own. Whereas I know with teens, they're going to need more space. But if I could tell you, because my kids range between 8 and 15, I can tell you truly there's not much difference. And all of us, when we have lost it, we're all helpless. We're all that tiny kid flailing about, or Tasmanian devil spinning around, smoke coming out of our ears. We're all as stuck as each other. And I think our kids are all needing the same thing, which is just to know that they're not alone, that we too know what it's like to have an emotion like that. I think is really, really important, that we love them and that they're worthy of love even in this. I think is really important to show somehow, and that we've got them. We're not going to let them make a mistake or step over that line that would be hurting someone or others.
And so is it that parents should expect over time, if we sit with children and meet them where they're at, should we see a gradual decline in the meltdowns, or is it really a developmental thing and it's more about a child's age?
Yeah, there's a few factors in regulation. Like, obviously every child is different, and the kids come out either really deep feeling and struggling with emotions, or, yeah, man, I'm chill. And I think also kids will struggle at different stages. So I think the sense that at 5, at 8, at 12, I'm no longer helping my child with this and surely this ends, that's a bit of a myth. I think that even our kid that was kind of a really easy baby and really easy toddler can suddenly struggle with extreme anxiety from age 8 to whenever, and that can absolutely wreak havoc, and we're stepping in really differently. And sometimes the really deep feeling kids, where you're still dealing with massive explosive meltdowns at age 5 and age 6, and you're thinking, I'm looking at their friends and they seem to be settling, what's wrong with my child? I think that that is all within the realms of normal, because we're also different, and how kids sort of deal with their emotions is so completely different. I do think sort of that repeated, consistent, coming in 30 to 40% of the time, helping our kids. So really it's about tuning into those low-level emotions, using those as a consistent opportunity to build that resilience and build that regulation. And it can surprise you, like just say the little kid that says, I'm going to put the baby behind a curtain, which again, I think is really regulated of that kid. We can say, don't worry, I won't let you do that. And if you ever feel like putting the baby behind a cushion, or if you're ever feeling jealous, you know, you can come and squeeze my hand, or you can let me know and I'll give you a big cuddle. Building that idea in the low level emotions is amazing, and kind of having our child know they can come to us and help seek. And that all builds that independent ability to regulate. And then I think it's sitting through the eye of the storm. So for anyone out there with someone that is, they're struggling to regulate and it feels way beyond their peers, there's two things I'd say. One, it will get easier. Like it really does. These kids that are so hard, particularly in the early years, that really struggle to regulate, sometimes those kids are easier tweens and teens, is my experience. Those really kind of volatile emotional kids. And sometimes it's about kind of going for the ride and trusting in the process. And when you get it wrong, repairing. And also putting your hand up when something doesn't feel right, in terms of if you really feel like, hang on, this is taking a huge toll on the whole family. It's dominating the whole house. It's really feeling like the problem is starting to spread into other areas. I always say, look at the whole picture. So we might have a child that has these explosive, volatile tantrums, meltdowns after school. And then we go, what are the other factors in that child's life? Maybe they've become a big brother or sister. Maybe they're in kindy and they really struggle to regulate. But if that child's going well at school and you're not getting any kind of feedback from the teacher, and they're making and retaining friends and they're able to enjoy activities, we've got to kind of look at that whole picture and go that it's going to get there. We're going to get there. They just have to keep showing that for now. Whereas if that was then bleeding into every area of that child's life, and we're kind of getting calls from school and we're getting other signs that they're not going well, it's about knowing when to seek help. And then the final thing I think we can do is some emotion coaching. So that's when we're calm and when we're connected and at a completely later stage, like just say you've got one child that keeps hitting their sibling and we're doing the low level and we're doing the stepping in the moment when they're really heated. And then we might kind of choose an opportunity to go for a little walk with them side by side, or shoot hoops with them, or driving in the car when you're kind of in that position, and say, you know, I was thinking about that big fight you had with your brother yesterday, it seemed like. And we just want to coach through what happened. Seems like he touched your favorite thing and then you got upset and then you hit him and then I got mad and that's what happened. And particularly once kids are over five, we can say, you know, I wonder what we could do different because that didn't go well for you or for me or for anyone. What can we do different? And we start to build this kind of practicing outside the moment, what we could do different, and just trusting and believing in your kid, because all kids want to be good kids. They truly do, especially the kids that keep getting it wrong. They really want to be good kids and they keep mucking it up.
And you're right, they do wake up every morning and genuinely want to, for it to be a good day. No one wakes up and thinks, I want today to be really crappy and I'm going to push my parents'
buttons. I want to be really annoying and kind of ruin everybody's day, and I want to get yelled at. I want to be the name everyone calls. Like, no kid wants that. They just, again, are they okay or not okay? That's a kid that's having more not okay moments.
And you talked about parents seeking some further support. What would that support look like?
Yeah, for most of these kind of behavioural issues with kids, we want to start with a GP, because that's going to guide us into some other support. Now, I love occupational therapists. I'm such a huge, I just rave on and on about them because I've spent about 10 years on the floor of their offices through the raising of my four boys. So OTs are amazing. And when we talk about OT, we want an OT that's sort of doing floor-based sensory incorporated emotion work, not necessarily the OT that's helping with pencil grip and posture. So there's two kinds of OTs. We want that behavioural OT. But, you know, your GP can, and often you can get a mental health plan if there's a significant issue going on too. So your GP is going to say, yeah, let's start here. Your GP also hears lots of stories. So they're going to go, you know what, let's get an assessment done. There might be something that they think, let's just get an assessment done now and find out if there's more going on, like neurodivergence or ADHD or something like that. Now, just because a child is struggling regulating emotions, it doesn't mean there's a diagnosis. And so there's no fear in checking it out with a GP. And I always say that even if you start with something like, if a child is struggling with behavior and emotions and their speech is behind, if we get a bit of speech therapy and then they can communicate, that makes such a difference for them. So starting with those kind of places, I think, is the way to go with very young children. And obviously with older children where they are a bit more involved and they want a change, it's about probably seeing a child psychologist and, again, talking to your GP first, because they know where to send you. And starting with that, I think, can be really helpful, but also looking at your parenting. So that's probably what I do, but it's why I wrote my book as well. But having a tool that parents could go to, because one part of it is supporting our child, but the other part is what we're kind of supporting them with in terms of that relationship at home. And so having an understanding of what brings us to our knees, what emotions we struggle with, helps us so much to help these particular kids as well. So it's, for me, it's a bit of a twofold thing.
And we hear from a lot of families that sometimes they feel like they've got to walk away in that moment, that it's too hard. Why is it really important for parents to not walk away during those moments?
I think if walking away is better than losing it. So if you need to walk away to get yourself back to a place where you can step in, that is definitely the best approach. I definitely try to do that myself. And we're talking about, sometimes it's about something big happens and you even just turn away for a second to, before you turn back, or having a drink of water. Sometimes we actually need to say, Mummy's having a timeout and we're going to walk away. So I do think a parental timeout and the ability to pause and the ability to go, I'm just not going to deal with this yet because I might say something that will be worse than what my child has said, that's really important. But then knowing that if we can, you know, that 30%, if we can really lean in, as uncomfortable as that is for us, just some of the time, I think that makes such a big difference to our kids. Often what we're seeing is the tip of the iceberg and we lean in just on that particular issue and it just helps everything in terms of their brain, in terms of helping them regulate so that this is less intense next time. It really makes a big difference.
And do you think that by leaning in and learning these skills, we can really help support children's mental health as they grow and develop into their teen and young adult years?
I couldn't believe it more strongly. We know from the evidence, if we can sort of lean in and do the stuff that we've talked about today, around 30 to 40% of the time, this is our biggest chance of creating a child that reaches their potential. And that's their mental health potential, their physical health, ability to make and retain friends, academic potential, all of it. But everything we want for our kids is so much about investing a little bit in our ability to be what they need in these moments. And it's not going to come from Kumon classes or whatever else you're thinking of investing in, right? So it's seriously the most important thing we could lean into. And it's the work we need to do that is the hardest bit. So absolutely, I think it makes the biggest difference. And like I said, in all of my work, particularly in the area of law and justice, where I worked there in mental health, and I just saw the significant impact that we can make while we've got our kids here. And as a mum with a 15-year-old, I can tell you I'm officially lost that, like, obviously he still comes to us with his problems, but he values the opinion of his friends now so much more. And I've got the younger three that I can still tell they hang on my every word still, and I'm like, I'm making the most of that. Yes. Once they value the opinion of their friends, which is a normal developmental stage, it's a lot harder to turn around and start doing it then.
And I feel, listening to you talk today, like we're being a part of a generational shift. We started this conversation talking about us perhaps not learning how to manage our own emotions as children, because it was a different way of parenting when you and I were children. And so we're really helping the next generation, so that when our kids have kids, they've got these skills to really look differently at their children and the behaviours.
It's massive. And, you know, I often think about, as educated as I was coming into my parenting, I remember the way it felt when my son was having really big meltdowns and he was biting friends, and the way it felt inside me then. And I think of how far I've come through practice and practice and practice over the course of four kids. And now with my younger kids, how it's not like it ever just gets easy peasy, but it has gotten a lot easier with that practice. And then I picture what it might be like now for my four boys when their child has their first meltdown, and are they going to feel a little bit more comfortable and a little bit more calm? And are they going to lean straight for, oh, you're not okay, instead of stop that? And I just think, what a wonderful thing, what a gift. But mostly I think we're giving our kids, irrespective of whether they have kids, what I know is that so many of us have feelings and we just shove them down and we scroll or we shop or we drink or we whatever we do. And I just think our kids are going to have a vocab. Oh, there, I'm feeling that emotion. I've had practice at regulating through that, and it's going to feel slightly less uncomfortable for them. And I think that's the biggest gift of all.
Jen, I love all the practical strategies that you've given our listeners today. And if they remember nothing else from our conversation, what would you want them to take away?
Two things. One, you are not alone. If you have a child that is what appears as defiant or really, really shy, anxious, and you worry, I think as parents, we jump to the, if this never changes my child, we'll never make a friend, or they'll wind up in prison. We jump to that end of the road. And I just want you to know you're so not alone. We are all struggling with children who are working out how to do their emotions. And I think kids these days are showing them a little bit better than we did because we've allowed them the space to do this. It is a good thing. It feels terrifying in the moment, but you are not alone, is what I want you to know. We all got kids with emotions, and the more you can share that, talk about it, ask for help, the better. And the second thing I would say is keep that 30% in mind. If you are sitting on the couch and you find yourself feeling really terrible because you mucked up or because you got it wrong and you didn't go in with connection and you look back and think, I got that all wrong. I totally misread my child and now I feel terrible. I know that going in and saying sorry and repairing is just one of the best things we can do as parents. And often the breakthroughs happen, I think, in repair as well. I think it's a really magical process. But just rather than beat yourself up because you got it wrong, try to catch what you did do well that day. Often I talk to parents and they lost it at dinner time and they were single parenting and right on dinner and they'll be so upset. I'm the worst parent. I'm pretty sure I've mucked my child up forever. And I'm like, number one, that's not true. Number two, talk me through what happened from breakfast. And this parent will tell me about all the amazing things they did. They broke up fights without losing it. They connected with their kids and they took them to the park and they did all these things that we're doing as parents. And they read them two stories, but it was just at that 11th hour they lost it. And it's like really focusing on what you got right rather than the bit you got wrong is so much better for you. And try to say to yourself, you know what, I really care about this. I'm a really good parent. I'm doing the best that I can. I'm absolutely doing my best. And that self-compassion, I think, flows to our child because often they're like, yeah, so's my kid. Actually, they're doing the best they can too. And I think that gets us in a better place to sort of start again tomorrow.
What a beautiful message to finish on, Jen. Thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate you having this conversation with us.
Absolute pleasure.
And thank you to our listeners for joining us. If you would like to keep up to date with our latest conversations, we'd love it if you like and subscribe to our Emerging Minds Families podcast channel. You can also find us on Instagram at Emerging Minds AU or on Facebook at Emerging Minds Families. You have been listening to an Emerging Minds Families podcast. If anything spoken about in today's episode has been distressing for you or you find yourself struggling, please reach out for help. You can call Lifeline on 131114, or more resources for support can be found in our show notes.
Visit our website at www.emergingminds.com.au/families for a wide range of free information and resources to help support child and family mental health. Emerging Minds leads the National Workforce Centre for Child Mental Health. The centre is funded by the Australian Government Department of Health under the National Support for Child and Youth Mental Health Program.